Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, Amber and I are going to talk to Nick Bilton. He is the author of Hatching Twitter. That's a tell-all book about how Twitter began, and there's all sorts of scandals involved. We'll see what's going on with that. Plus, Facebook's buying up companies and also rolling out autoplay video ads. Are you ready for that? All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by Cashfly at cachefly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 141, recorded Friday, December 20th, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 1 million high-quality video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code SOCIALHOUR1213. And by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media with Social Media Solutions from SAP to improve your customer service and support experience. Take a guided tour at sap.com/twit. And by Hulu Plus. Hulu Plus lets you binge on thousands of hit shows anytime, anywhere, on your TV, your PC, your smartphone, or your tablet. Visit HuluPlus.com/twit and start your free 2-week trial. That's HuluPlus.com/twit. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another fun-filled episode of The Social Hour from December 20th in beautiful, sunny Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and I am in South Florida, away from the terrible weather in Toronto, and very happy to be on a warm, sunny beach for the holidays, Sarah. So it's good down here. Life is good.
Amber, you do this pretty much every winter. You fly south. You hang out in Florida. We do a few shows around the holidays where, you know, you're Instagramming pictures of yourself from the beach, and, you know, and you look really tan, and you start wearing pastels, and everyone else is really, really jealous.
I do that, Sarah. I know. I was also posting pictures of a book I was reading on the beach. That was research, though, Sarah, right? Because I needed to read the book for our guest today. So yeah. It's all good. But yes, I do this. I'm a young snowbird.
Well, good. And what better reading, really, than the history of Twitter? And what better guest than the person who wrote the book, the tell-all story of Twitter called Hatching Twitter? And that is New York Times writer Nick Bilton, who joins us now. Hey, Nick.
How you doing?
Very well. Amber, what I mean, you said that you were about halfway through the book and that it's already pretty drama-filled. What does that mean?
It is. You know, I guess what I was expecting at first is that maybe it would be a little more business focused, maybe not so dramatic, but it is a very dramatic story. So, Nick, I don't know how you did it, how much research you had to do, but there is a lot of detail within a few pages. I was absolutely hooked. Could you talk a bit about the process of writing the book and how you did some of the extensive research that you put into it?
Yes. So it's funny because people, you know, they want to know why the beginning of the book didn't actually have a lot of business in it. And the reason was just because the beginning of Twitter didn't have a lot of business in it. So what I did with the story was essentially I decided to tell the human side of the story because it was, you know, essentially about these four guys who were once friends and now are mostly no longer, who came together to build this company and accidentally ended up changing the world in doing so. As far as the reporting, one of the things that was truly fascinating to me was that they had left a trail of tweets and photos and videos and check-ins and Facebook friendships and all these different things that I was able to use that I could pull together for the reporting of the book. And you get these incredible details about what they were wearing and what the weather was and what they said and did. And I found that truly fascinating in reporting on the book.
So, Nick, you and I both live in San Francisco. I remember when you told me you were starting to write a Twitter book, and it was happening. And yeah, I felt like you kind of would go away for months at a time, and I'd see you, and you'd be like, "Ugh, just writing." Yeah, obviously, a lot of research goes into it. Who did you have to like sidle up to in order to get some of these stories that end up being so insidery?
Well, so when I first started writing the book, I knew that I had about a year and a half before the IPO was going to happen. And so I just kind of hit the ground running. And there was a lot of back and forth with Twitter, whether they would work with me, whether they wouldn't. And in the, you know, middle, they said, no, they can't. And so I had to essentially figure out how to report around the company. And so, but eventually what happened was I was able to get enough reporting, and I got access to thousands of documents from sources there and investors and so on. And I got access to all of the PR pitches and the things that didn't go out and the things that did and the internal legal documents and so on. And that was enough to get me to a point where I went to certain people and they just really had no choice but to talk. I think that one of the things that I found was that sometimes your enemies will tell your story for you better than you will. And so you should always engage in some level.
So how different do you think that the book would have been had you been able to go through Twitter directly? The company had been working with you on the story and, you know, possibly giving you more of the rosier version of the story.
You know, I think that if I would have been able to go through Twitter, it probably wouldn't have been as good of a book. I think, you know, the access that I would have gotten in the beginning would have been colored by the company and probably would have been a little bit more press releasey. And so them pushing back on me and me having to do what I had to do was really, really helpful in the long run, because it really helped that I got the entire story and that I got the correct story. And I think that so much in technology reporting, you end up seeing people that get access, and their access ends up looking almost like a glorified press release. And so while I was stressed at first when they said they wouldn't work with me, by the end, I was actually incredibly relieved.
I was reading a review of the book on the Washington Post website, and I really like this quote at the end of the article that says, "In a society that idolizes tech founders, it is healthy to be reminded they are so often ordinary young men." And I'm just curious, when you're writing the book, if that's something that was important to you to be able to reveal.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the story of Steve Jobs, and everyone says, here's the guy who, you know, changed the world and was perfect along the way. And the reality is he changed the world, but he was not in the closest perfect along the way. And so many tech founders idolize him and what he's done. And that was included in some of the people that were involved in the early days of Twitter. And I really wanted to kind of show that what makes this story so amazing and these people so amazing is the fact that they were all very flawed human beings. They were not the Steve Jobs figures that some people believe that they are. They're innovators, and they come up with great ideas, but they also come up with bad ideas. And I think that it's really important for people who are aspiring to start startups and build things to realize that they're going to make mistakes along the way, and that, you know, hiding those under the rug is not necessarily the best way to go about it.
Yeah, just today there was a story about Jack Dorsey selling some shares back to Square, and I don't remember exactly what publication article I read, but it turned into, maybe this is in response to the unflattering light that was portrayed in Nick Bilton's book, Hatching Twitter, of Dorsey. I mean, you must be hearing that a lot. Is there any kind of communication that you've had with the founders have they mentioned anything to you about things not being flattering or downright inaccurate?
So I can't say specifically who I've spoken to, but I have spoken to a number of the people in the book, and most of them, some of the founders included, have said, you know, that it's incredibly accurate about what happened. And while there are certain things that they did not want out there, there's almost a sense of relief that they're out there. That's, you know, the story that we have all heard before the book came out, was that, you know, this was a perfect little company that kind of became what it became. And the reality was that there was infighting and there was backstabbing and all of these different things and friendships that tore apart. And in the process of that, what we kind of learned was, in the book especially, is that that's not what went down. It was, you know, it was people that were pushing each other aside. And the kind of the press about it was kind of towing the party line to a certain degree. And so, you know, one of the founders specifically said to me that, you know, it was a huge relief off his shoulders to see
there in that way. You know, as far as the story about Dorsey today, it was actually in Forbes. You know, I think that he's an incredibly smart guy, and he's done some incredibly great things. And one of the problems that happened is that I think he kind of got a little carried away with the story of the founding of Twitter, and he had an incredibly important role, but so did 12 other people, and they were kind of written out of history. One of the things I really tried to do with the book was to really show that it was a village that built this thing. It was not one person. It was, you know, dozens of different ideas and explorations and iterations and people running the company and not running the company, and they all played a very, very important role, and it was not just one person that did it.
And recent news talking about how the book has been optioned to become a television series, which I think is very exciting. And when I was reading the book, at least at the beginning, the first thing I thought of was the Facebook movie and how this would make a great movie. But turns out it's going to be a TV series. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that came to be?
Yeah, so, you know, when I set out to write the book, I did not have any imagination that it would become a television series. That was, you know, there was a part of me that thought, hey, maybe this could be a movie. It's a fascinating story of, you know, four guys, you know, that came from very, very distinct backgrounds. One of them, you know, Biz grew up on welfare. You know, Evan Williams grew up on a farm and, you know, became a billionaire. And they... you know, ended up at the top 100 most influential people in the world, Dinner for Time. And there are all these different things. And of course, it's very cinematic. But the thing that about it becoming a TV show was really what came out of people reading the book in Hollywood. And there was a lot of interest. And I'm pretty excited to kind of take this to the next level and see what we can do now with the story in a television format.
How did you get approached about the idea that, you know, at first I heard, oh, there's going to be a Twitter movie. Who's going to play everybody in the Twitter movie? Now it's a television series, which is always kind of odd because you're like, well, does it just mimic the actual real world version of Twitter, which is obviously an evolving story itself? How much are you going to be involved in the next iteration of the story?
Well, so part of the option is that I'll be writing the first draft of the script for Lionsgate, which will be very exciting. And I'm also going to be a producer on the show. And,
wow.
And so I'll have and part of the reason for that is because I want to ensure that it's not, you know, I mean, things can go to Hollywood and you know, a story about a cute bunny rabbit that saves the world could end up being about a dinosaur that killed everyone. You know, and I want to make sure that doesn't happen with the Twitter story. And I think that the big thing is ensuring that the people, you know, I mean, the big thing I said earlier, one of the reasons I set out to write the story was because I'm sure that the credit that they deserve. And so with the television experience, I want to ensure that too. And I think what I'm really excited about as far as a TV show is that you get to really explain who these characters are. You get to show what motivates them and they've done, where they came from, in a way that I still even couldn't do with the book properly. And I think that's pretty exciting.
So, Amber, it's funny. You're in Florida and everything's working out okay, and Nick's in L.A., and I guess L.A. and Petaluma don't agree with each other today because we've had some technical difficulties with Nick. But I think that is just a great excuse for us to continue part two of the Hatching Twitter interview, probably after the new year when things have settled down a little bit. What do you think?
Yeah, and I think when he starts working on the television series, maybe he can give us the inside scoop on what's really happening, Sarah. So we'll have him back on the show. He's a great guest and super excited that he came on to talk about Hatching Twitter. It's a really good book, and we'll have him back in the new year. So lots of reason to tune back in 2014.
Exactly. Yes, we will hopefully fix our Skype issues as well. Sorry to everybody who was watching the live version of this. It was some fits and starts. But yes, we will continue the interview. And by the way, Hatching Twitter, which is, it's extremely popular, is definitely something that you'll want to pick up. We've actually talked about it in a previous show. It's available on Audible if you prefer the audiobook version. and lots of good stuff out there. Nick is, you know, he's a friend of mine. He's extremely smart. He also has a really, really popular Instagram feed. Guy knows how to take pictures, so I would say if anybody's an authority on social media, it's him. Okay, before we move on, a quick reminder that the Social Hour is about to move to Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. That happens after the first of the year. In fact, well, it's the second week of January. The week that's actually New Year's Day week is a little bit weird around here because people are in and out. But Amber and I are both really excited about that. So if you do like to tune into the live show and you like to see us with all of our technical issues, warts and all, Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific is our new time. We're really excited about that. We think it feels different and fresh, doesn't it, Amber?
Yeah, I think it's a great time slot and just a little bit earlier in the day. So people who are stopping work to maybe have lunch, you can tune in live. And if you subscribe to the show, of course, you can continue to download it and you will see a version that is different than the live show. Maybe, I don't want to say better, but it's different.
Yes, it is definitely different. Yeah, they're both good. It's basically the same show. It's just a, you know, more polished version. All right, before we move on to some of our news of the week, let's take a moment to thank Shutterstock for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. If you haven't ever hung out on Shutterstock for very long, you're missing out on some great stuff because it is the place to find an image or a video for your next creative project that looks good, that's professional, that's some, you know, it's some sort of clip that you'd never get otherwise. Maybe it's in a far-off land, or it's a beautiful sunrise, or there's some sort of an angle or an animal, or conveys a certain kind of emotion. Shutterstock is, it's really quite amazing. You can choose from over 1 million stock video clips. High-quality stuff, 1 million, think about that. 2D, 3D animation, motion graphics, most of them are in HD. The contributors to Shutterstock are pro filmmakers, they're pro animators. And not only that, but the team at Shutterstock is reviewing all of these videos and making sure that they're awesome before you ever see them. 12,000 video clips are being added each week. So every time you visit, you'll find something new. If you're looking for something specific, or maybe you're just kind of looking for something that's in a particular category, or, you know, it's by a particular contributor that you've really liked in the past. You've used some of their stuff before. A certain kind of clip resolution. All of that can be added to your parameters in search, so you can find the perfect video for you. Once you find videos, hey, maybe you're working with a team or you just want to bookmark stuff to come back to you later, you can save videos to a clip box. That makes it really easy to say, hey, Amber, I found these four videos. Please tell me which one you like best. And then we can be on our way as far as our projects go. Individual clips or video packs are two different options for downloading. And you don't need a credit card if you want to try out Shutterstock. Maybe you might say, well, I don't know, it seems like kind of a hassle. No. You can start using Shutterstock today by signing up for a free account. Once you decide to purchase, you can use the offer code SOCIALHOUR1213. That's SOCIALHOUR1213. And new accounts will receive 25% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com. And for 25% off new accounts, use the offer code SOCIALHOUR1213. Really good stuff at Shutterstock. Really, really quality stuff. People are making beautiful, beautiful videos for a variety of projects, whether it be advertisements or websites or, you know, some sort of a promotional video for your company via Shutterstock every day. We thank them for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. All right, Amber, have you checked out this article from Marketing Land that shows that Facebook, this is coming from Nielsen Research, But we cover a variety of research, Nielsen being one of them, on The Social Hour, that Facebook comes away with the number one mobile app of the year, except of the top 10, Google has five.
Yeah,
Facebook just has the one.
Yeah, you know, I'm not totally surprised by that, although I'm suspecting that this could be the last year that they hold that top position. That would be my prediction if you're asking me to forecast what will happen a year from now. But I was a little bit surprised, I think, with Google having so many of the top spots. Like you mentioned, 5 of the top 10. I use tons of Google services, but I guess I never put it in perspective that way to think about how popular their mobile apps are and how much they're growing. I mean, the interesting thing I think about this report is the percentage change from the previous year. And you can see with things like Google search that the percentage change is really quite high at 37%. And Instagram, which I thought would be a little bit higher, Sarah, I don't know how you felt about that, but it comes in at number 7.
I thought it would be higher too. I mean, Instagram is wildly popular. It's a little bit strange to me that Facebook would be number 1, Instagram would be number 7, and Google would have all the others. But hey, you know, numbers are numbers. I think there's probably, Facebook probably enjoys, because there's so much that can happen within the Facebook app. Like it or hate it, I mean, it's kind of got everything. I mean, you could pretty much look at everybody's Instagram photos as well inside the Facebook app, or people who are sharing them to Facebook, rather. But there's actually quite a bit going on in this article. 25% of U.S. households have at least one tablet. So certainly, I mean, I prefer to check out my news feed on my iPad. Obviously, there are other tablets that you could use, but that's the kind of tablet I have, rather than Facebook on my phone. I almost never check Facebook on my phone, Amber, maybe just because it's so text heavy. I'm sure Facebook doesn't want to hear that, but yeah, what the heck with Instagram? I mean, Instagram is all about mobile. I don't even really use the web Instagram experience. How does it come in at number 7?
Yeah, I mean, it just shows you what a strong hold Google has over all experiences in the digital space. So I think with Instagram, again, I would see that maybe climbing up the list. But I do think Facebook will fall down at least to 2 or 3 over the next year. And I thought it was also kind of interesting. Twitter did make it to number 10. And that is also significant, even though we think about Twitter, you know, it's so many people are using Twitter these days. But there was a point when it was a very small percentage of the population. I think at one point it was, you know, like 2 or 3% of the U.S. population used Twitter, but it just goes to show you how popular also that tool has become and how social the top apps are, right, Sarah? I mean, really, most of these have some social element to them.
What I find very curious, of the top smartphone apps of 23, as designated by Nielsen, that number 9 is stocks. And maybe that's just because there are a lot of really wealthy people out there that have gotten rich off of tech companies that are very interested in stocks, and I just am not one of them, so I'm not using my stock app ever. Or a lot of journalists who are wondering, you know, how many people sold BlackBerry, you know, in the last 24 hours since the batteries. But stocks, I mean, when's the last time you opened the stocks app?
Never.
Yeah, I don't think I ever have. Well, I probably have once, but like probably not in the last 3 or 4 versions of the iPhone. I know it, yeah. I know they're in there somewhere, but I'm just, how can that be? Yeah, I don't know.
Close to Instagram, you have to wonder, right?
Yeah, really.
It is interesting. And speaking of Facebook, this is an interesting link that you found talking about Facebook introducing video advertisements in news feeds. And we've mentioned this on the show before. I guess this is the official statement from Facebook as far as them telling or warning, I might say, their users that this is coming into play.
Yeah, autoplay video ads. We knew it was happening, and the company has pretty much laid out the situation. And I think that that's the right call from the Facebook, PR team. They're saying, listen, promoted videos are coming. Here's what we're thinking. Here's what we want it to look like. I have to say, we know in the past that Facebook has done a lot of retracting. You know, there are privacy issues. People go crazy and Facebook says, okay, let's rework this. I like the approach of what's going on here. Facebook is not attempting to fool anybody into thinking, oh, yeah, that video that you watched was not an ad. I think that for the most part, even though I find Facebook ads a little intrusive, Amber, and certainly in my news feed, I see promoted pages much more than I used to. And I don't know, maybe I'm just hanging out on Facebook more. And I don't love them, but I'm not confused by them. I know what they are, and I can choose to linger and see who of my friends have you know, liked these promoted companies, or just scroll past. And I think as long as they do the same with video, that's okay. If it sort of, if it's an autoplay that doesn't have audio, it'll act a lot like Instagram, and I'm okay with that. If it's an autoplay video with audio, that's a deal breaker. And I think that the company knows that.
Yeah, I think they do. And I think it was smart of them also to explain in this news release in terms of what would happen as far as the video is using up some of your data on your mobile device, because they do explain it here very specifically, saying that the videos that will play will have been previously downloaded while you were connected to Wi-Fi. So don't worry about data and any charges that way, because that was one thing that we had talked about and we didn't really have an answer to that. So I do think it's great to see Facebook being more transparent about what's coming and how it will affect your experience. I did have to kind of giggle though, Sarah, I will say, at the first bullet point when they say, rather than having to click or tap to play, videos will begin to play, as if that's some type of benefit to anyone. I mean, does anyone really want advertisements playing in their newsfeed? I don't know.
Not me necessarily. They don't.
I'm okay with it, but I wouldn't necessarily want it and think that this is a superior experience that they've provided to us.
Nobody wants this. I mean, nobody wants ads. Almost never, anyway. I've seen some Instagram ads, and I know that Facebook is different than Instagram. I've seen some Instagram ads where I'm like, I know exactly what's going on here, and I love it. It's a beautiful photo, and I love it. I'm glad it's here. I've actually thought that, which is very rare, right? Maybe I'm just, you know, I just like a good photo. But we're all used to ads. That's the way that it's going. If Facebook can figure out how to have ads play that are going to attract customers. I mean, that's the whole point of ads. That's great. Good for them. And this was inevitable. So I think that just being as transparent as possible is the only course of action for the company.
It definitely is. And just to move backwards to Twitter again, we have another story about Twitter and talking about the users of Twitter. Now, you may suspect that the majority of users are people who make a lot of noise, but I think in this article that you found here, there's one little phrase that explains it that says, almost nobody on Twitter is somebody. And I couldn't explain it any better than that. Just talking about how most people on Twitter don't have massive followings, but they do make up a significant amount of the conversation.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I mean, if there was ever a big research dump that proved that there's a lot of hot air on Twitter, it may be this article over at O'Reilly.com by John Bruner, who he pretty much followed about 400,000 Twitter accounts. He wrote a Python script and was able to glean a bunch of data from these folks, and he found out some interesting stuff. Yeah, the median Twitter account, I mean, of all the Twitter accounts, we're talking about averages here, has one follower, just a single solitary follower. And you go, what? That's crazy. But that's just the median. Among a smaller subset of accounts that have posted in the last 30 days, so most accounts have not, that's the majority of Twitter, not active in the last month. Okay, so there you go. But of the people that have been active in the last 30 days, the median account has 61 followers. Now, there are a lot of people who are watching and listening to The Social Hour saying, well, that's me, you know, I'm okay with that. And that's absolutely true. But I think that you have an Alec Baldwin or, you know, a political figure or somebody who gets in the news for some reason. And it's like, all you need is a little bit of attention in the media in general. And your Twitter followers, if you have an account, you can, you know, be verified as such, goes through the roof. So we're used to people having millions of followers or at least hundreds of thousands of followers. And you get used to that being better. Where really the reality is the vast majority of people who are using the service, even people who are using it on a regular basis, they're active users, have a very small social circle. They follow more people than follow them. And Amber, I don't know about you, but I'd really like to, you know, after looking at this and considering that we have so many people who are very active with us and followers matter very little, I'd like the stigma to be, you know, let's get rid of that stigma that if you follow more people than follow you, somehow you're not doing it right.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. I mean, I think people also place too much emphasis on the number of people who are following them. Like you said, Sarah, most people I know who use Twitter use it for information gathering, right? So they don't really necessarily care if they have massive followings. Although I still get, you know, those emails once in a while or messages on Twitter where people are really clamoring to be able to reach certain numbers as far as the number of followers. But I mean, hopefully, I think it happens for most people organically that you get there because you put out great content. And we've shown before in the show, there's no real shortcut to that without, you know, buying followers and then you get found out and it's not a pretty scenario anymore.
Yeah. You want to hear something really crazy? I told the guys on TNT this yesterday and everyone was like, wait, what? Say that again. This is Justin Bieber related because I know that you guys all really like Justin Bieber. One in every 1,000 Twitter accounts. Okay. So of all of the Twitter accounts out there, one in every 1,000 has a Twitter handle that somehow refers to Justin Bieber.
Oh my goodness. Okay,
sorry, I was trying to say that without laughing, but no, I'm not kidding. That's a real thing. That's a real statistic.
I think that I was following Justin Bieber for some reason. I can't figure out why, but I just went
sure.
there. I know. Well, he's Canadian, right? So we tend to stick together. So that would be my excuse.
All right.
But I really think that my husband, Chris, went into my account and unfollowed him because he made a comment about it once and I'm no longer following him. So I guess that's good news. But he does have 47 million followers. So he doesn't need any more, Sarah.
Yeah, he's a pretty popular guy. I am not following
the
Biebs. You know, it's nothing personal. But yeah, he doesn't need me. He won't notice. But I do think it's interesting. I mean, some people are Bieber believers. I believe I'm using that term correctly. So sure, you know, you make that part of your Twitter handle. But obviously, that's not all legitimate Twitter users. We got some bots in there as well. Just hopefully trying to sell you some prescription medicine, I guess, using Justin Bieber as the catalyst. But yeah, this is fascinating. It's a really good read. There are a lot of statistics even that we're not even going to be able to cover here, but we will have the link to that study in our show notes at twit.tv/TSH. So do not fear. You can always read the full story as well. You know, going back to Facebook just for a second, Amber, because we should really do like a This Week in Facebook type of a thing in addition to the Social Hour because it's a show all of its own. But Facebook this week, I think it was about 3 days ago, acquired a company called SportStream. And you might say, oh, Facebook's getting into sports. What SportStream does is it finds Facebook talk about sporting events that are happening, you know, live. It's very real-time, up-to-the-minute type stuff. So let's say an ESPN was looking for who was talking about a particular game that they can then use for their own data. Facebook's media partners, Fox News, Fox Sports, rather, is one of them, could then say, all right, well, we're going to use SportStream to get a big group of public status updates about the big game, about the Super Bowl or something else, from Facebook's data feed. So it's really, it's a partnership between Facebook and a media company so that then in the next news broadcast, we could say, well, and on Facebook, here are all the people that are talking about the show. And it sort of presents all that data in an organized way. And SportStream sounds like it's a really good middleman between the two. I can't say that I spend a lot of time on Facebook talking about sports with people, but I do talk about sports on Twitter. That's just a personal preference, but I think it's smart of Facebook to try to use this more intelligently.
Yeah, and I would argue, too, that at least in the television world, I think that sports organizations have probably done the best job of any group out there in terms of understanding social media and better integration between social media in the television world. I mean, they've been very fast to adopt all these different tools and figure out how to have that conversation. You know, you see newscasts all the time, join the conversation, but really nothing unique is happening when you actually go on there. But I think in the sports world, I think they have done a fabulous job as far as integrating different platforms. So they're definitely one to look to as far as being a model.
Yes, absolutely. Good acquire, Facebook, and congratulations to the SportStream team. All right, before we get into our spotlight and some of your feedback, let's take a moment to thank SAP, our second sponsor of this episode of The Social Hour. We love SAP because they make a product called Social Media Solutions, which helps companies and people working in those companies like you use social media to make customer service and support better. That's the goal for companies, right? So how does it work? Well, people are often talking about your brand. Let's say you work for a large enterprise. You have to keep on top of who's talking about your brand and be able to make some sense of that and adjust your strategy based on feedback. But how do you figure out where all those conversations are happening? Might be Twitter, Facebook. Those are obvious ones. But what if it's on someone's personal blog? You don't know who this person is. You know, maybe it's not. It's, you know, the search results don't always just give you the whole story. You actually have to do, it's like a treasure hunt for feedback and keywords. And maybe you'd like to monitor what people are saying about your biggest competitor. Maybe that's a big part of what you need to know so that you make your products better. That's all part of the listening component. You can use social media solutions from SAP to listen. You're basically listening to the internet. You're getting all this feedback on where your brand and your products are coming up and figure out, okay, now how do I engage with these people? That's the engaging component of social media solutions. That's where you give back. You say, you've got a tech support problem. I am listening to you. I can hear you. You are important to me. Let's fix your problem. Or you might want to buy one of our products. It seems like you might have a question. Let me reach out to you. You're basically, you're there. You're fixing people's problems. You're making people happy. You know what that does? It drives sales. It solves customer problems. You can respond to customer feedback. Everybody's happy. And of course, if someone's got a tech support problem, I mean, that's just the most frustrating thing in the world. You want to be on top of that. If you can get back to somebody right away, they walk away a happy customer and everybody's happy. And you've done your job even better than you could do it without social media solutions. So if you'd like more than marketing, you want to improve your customer service and support experience, go to sap.com/twit. Take a guided tour and see for yourself how social media solutions from SAP works. And thanks to SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour and being so loyal to us.
I know.
We love it's been SAP.
It's been amazing. And I really honestly think that 2014 is going to be an amazing year for people who are managing social media for companies. And I think companies are going to throw way more money at social media than they have before. I've just been watching some of the stats that have come out. So it's not about arguing anymore to be able to have someone dedicated to social media. Sometimes it's going to be a whole team of people. So we finally come to a point where, you know, this is a big deal for most organizations and you need robust tools to be able to manage it too.
Yes, very true. Very true. SAP, they know how to do it right. Hey, so a spotlight this week I found it wasn't by accident. I found it on social media where I spend most of my time, Amber. And this is a new blogging platform called Exposure.
Great name.
Isn't it? I think so, too. It's actually a perfect name because it is photography based. Now, this doesn't mean, this is only some sort of a blogging tool for photographers. That's not the case necessarily at all. But it is visual forward, meaning if you have visuals to share that a story is attached to, the visuals are really the essence of what Exposure wants to provide for anybody who's accessing your site. So it reminds me, Amber, a lot of Medium. Medium has gotten a lot of attention. Speaking of, you know, Twitter founders, Evan Williams, one of the founders of Twitter, started Medium. We've talked about Medium in the past as an easy way to put together some, you know, a variety of long form blogs and think pieces. But Exposure is based on the fact that, you know, you want to add text, you've got stories to tell, but photos are the most important part of it. So important, in fact, that the company, at least for now, in their FAQ, if you read about it, says, we don't actually want to give people the option to add videos. We don't want embeddable videos. That's not really what we do. We're really all about still photography because it's powerful on its own. And I really like this. I think it's certainly a niche product, but I was looking at just some weekly staff picks on Exposure, and everything is just, it's so beautiful because you've got these people who, visuals can be so, so powerful. And you know, they can enhance a story so much, and it's quite well done.
So it looks like there's an annual subscription fee. Is that right, Sarah? $99 or something like that?
Yeah, I think it's $9 a month or a $99 a year subscription. So there is a free version, but it only allows you to, I think it's like you have three post updates, and then it'll say, okay, well, if you like this, then yes, you have to go subscription based. So it's a little bit of a try before you buy type of situation they have. The company says too, hey, well, why don't we offer something that's a free tier? And they said, I think too many companies focus on getting a bunch of users and then figuring out a business model afterwards. And that can sometimes be tricky, right? You can either there is no business model, or you somehow upset the people who thought that your product was something different, and then all of a sudden you're forcing some sort of a monetary commitment on them. And so their model is, well, here's the subscription, and if this is the right product for you, that's what you pay.
Interesting. I'm curious to see how they'll do, because I think it's really beautiful. It's designed really well. I'm just curious if they'll get enough people who will be able to jump on board, because there's so many places you can share photos today through social sites, but it does look a lot like Medium too. It definitely has that look and feel to it. So we'll keep an eye on that one, Sarah.
Yes, we will. And you're right. It's true. I mean, Squarespace is a frequent sponsor all over our network and the Social Hour as well. And that's certainly a place that you can do visually stunning blog posts. And I mean, think about WordPress. Right? I mean, there are other options. I like the fact that Exposure says this is a place to talk about stuff, but it's really about showcasing your photos. So if anybody out there, I actually have a friend who uses Exposure, which is I've actually seen a little bit about the company based on her, and she is a photographer. But if anybody out there is using this effectively or has seen certain blogs or updates from anybody, and you have a good reason why this wouldn't work somewhere else, that would be great feedback for us, because we'd be able to pass it along to everybody else.
Yeah, definitely let us know. And Sarah, for this next story, it's funny, I have not heard of Storyful. I mean, it reminds me a little bit of Storyfy, but interesting to see that News Corp has just acquired Storyful for approximately $25 million. And the more I read into Storyful, I feel like I should have been well aware of what they do. It's a Dublin-based company who basically helps news organizations find news through social media sites. It seems like they have a bit of a focus on video as well. Are you familiar with them at all?
Storyful, what's so funny about Storyful too is that it sounds so much like Storify, but they're very different. It's not the same company at all. So I was not familiar with Storyful before I heard that News Corp bought them, but I actually think that it's a very interesting, it's really not unlike what SportStream is doing for Facebook, but this is on, News Corp is obviously, it owns Fox News and Wall Street Journal. It's a huge media company, has a lot of different properties. And what Storyful will do, and the company, by the way, says that they will continue to act as a standalone product with a variety of clients, supposedly. What it does is so let's say, Fox wants to figure out, okay, there was a fire in a particular place in a particular city, and let's figure out, who can be the first on the scene. And there's some sort of a unverified account on Instagram that's got video because the person may have lived right next door. Storyful, what it does is it's a combination of an algorithmic and curated, human-curated solution to basically pull that content from the web and give it to the people over at Fox so that they can say, oh, okay, this is verified, we can vouch for this content, this video, this tweet, this update, whatever. And it's a little bit of it's vetting the sources for you. Now, of course, you might say, well, that's really tricky. I mean, there's a lot of crappy information online, social media, that rumors spread like wildfire. But the idea that a news organization is able to use data from social media to make their broadcasts better rather than competing, I think is the right call. Right now the story is sort of like, well, news shows are going to die because social's always first. So if you can use a tool that allows you to use that social data that's always first more effectively so that you're at the top of the hour, you have more up-to-date information, I think that's pretty much a good thing.
It is. And I mean, it also, I think, shows how important the curation process is in terms of having people who are going through that much content and verifying that content, because I personally, I don't know if I would want that job, though, Sarah, I have to say. I think, you know, too much can go wrong as far as verifying certain things that people have sent in. And I think it's a bit risky, but it seemed, based on this article, that for News Corp, I mean, it's so important for them to be able to have their hands on all of this type of content. In the video space, particularly because of how they're trying to push it forward and innovate, and seems like a good buy for them. And I'm glad that I heard of it. But yes, like you, I'm thinking Storify all over again, but very different service.
Very different service. Yeah, they just sound the same. We've got a couple people in chat who, you know, saying social news is just a bad idea. Things are wrong. People aren't fact checking. I mean, the whole idea behind Storyful is that it's supposed to cut down on, you know, a tweet coming from something that seems like a reliable source but is maybe an unverified account. That's the whole point of it, is it's supposed to cut down on passing along information that was never true to begin with. Yeah. But yes, that's a legitimate problem. And it's really a legitimate problem on services that don't have any sort of verified checks next to people's names, so you don't really know what's going on. And by the way, the verified thing on Twitter is a bit of a mystery and always has been as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, also, most newsrooms are facing cuts right now, whether you're in television, radio, print obviously has been devastated. So I don't think that these organizations have the resources anymore to have an entire team dedicated to going through content and curating content and verifying content. By the time they do that, it's already broken across social media. They're late to the game. So the fact that Storyify actually licenses the content and has an agreement with so many different news organizations, I think it's a super smart move, because as far as I know, no one is doing a great job of that.
No, exactly. All right, Amber, I'm going to let you go ahead and introduce this next news item, because I don't know what it is.
You know what, Sarah? It's the weirdest thing. I feel like you've gotten into my head so much from doing the show every week that now when I see cute things online that are animals, I really look at them and I want to share them with you. So this is actually from a Social Hour fan, Avery Miller, and she just sent us a link that is not cat related, as she mentioned, but she said, what's cuter than, is it Corgi? I think we decided it was Corgi. Is that right?
Yep. That's right.
How you pronounce that type of dog?
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about corgis before on the show, and I cannot remember, but it was not that many weeks ago. And it was some social story that had to do with corgis. And I think corgi was the meme of the week, if that's right. So I think she's picking up on that story we had talked about, and she sent this link to these, I don't know, if you're an audio listener, just a bunch of cute little corgis, little animated corgis who are dancing through the screen. So appreciate that people like the animal portion of the Social Hour, and there's more coming up after our next advertiser too.
Yeah, the animal meme is really getting weird, Amber. It's really getting
weird.
I mean, this is I've not seen this before. I'm glad that you brought it to my attention. CorgiOrgy.com. I mean, URLs don't get much better than that.
It's a good one.
But it's like the corgi thing has sort of exploded overnight. Maybe it's just here because Brian Burnett, who's one of our Twit employees, has a corgi. So maybe I'm just seeing a lot of corgi videos, but I don't think so. I think it's they're internet darlings right now.
Yeah.
Why does this happen? How?
It's like cats are no longer ruling the internet, Sarah. I hate to say that.
I think that's a little crazy. We're getting ahead of ourselves here.
2014 could be the year of the corgi.
The year of the corgi. Sure. Okay. Yeah. Well,
we've got
the Doge meme. Amber, you and I have, you know, we were pretty happy about that a few weeks ago, which is not corgi related, but I think that there's some overlap.
Right?
Sure. Yeah.
Same category.
Yeah. Same idea. So maybe this is just the next natural progression little animated GIF websites.
So weird.
Like Corgi Orgy.
Yes, and if you were worried we weren't going to talk about cats at all, I did kind of tease that in our Ratter Fad, there is something cat-related.
Yes,
so
there
don't fear,
is.
Cat fans. It's not the end of the cats yet on the internet. There's still lots of room for all of you.
And this is a good one. I mean, I'm going to let Amber describe it to all of you, but in a few minutes, I think you're going to be pretty blown away. And you might have already seen this because I tweeted about it, but you know, we'll save an element of surprise. In the meantime, we love hearing from all of you. You can email us, you can send us voicemails, you can tweet at us. You can even tweet at us in all caps, and then we'll know that you're yelling. Yeah, whatever. Right. However you'd like to convey your displeasure or whatever you'd like to share with us. You know, maybe there's stories or tips, something you'd like us to look at, a question that you might have. All of it is fair game. We want to be able to tackle all of the topics that matter to you. So write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. Leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL. That's our Google voicemail box. Neither Amber nor I will answer the phone, but you can leave us a message and we promise to listen. Or you can record a video. You can upload it and send us the link again at thesocialhour@twit.tv. And just another reminder, because we're getting close to us changing our live recording schedule time going forward, starting the second week of January, all of Twit, we're starting out with a whole new schedule. It's going to be very exciting. It's 2014 is going to be new and fun and different, and the Social Hour is no exception. Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, Amber and I will sit down and do this show. It's going to be the show that you know and love, just on a different day. So if you do like checking in with us live, please do make a note of that on your calendar. All right, before we get to Amber's rad or fad that I'm very excited about, let's take a moment to thank Hulu Plus. They are our third sponsor of this episode of The Social Hour. You probably know about Hulu.com, right? I assume that you already do. With Hulu Plus, you can watch your favorite shows anytime, anywhere. Thousands of hit TV shows. I know I sound like, you know, someone's like not that cool aunt when I say hit TV shows, but they really are. I mean, there's like really popular television shows either in your living room on demand or on the go, on your tablet, on your smartphone. What I really like about Hulu Plus is I don't have to think about when any of the network shows I like actually air. I have no idea when New Girl airs. I do know that it's on Fox, but it's like, it wouldn't really matter if I didn't know what network it was on, because I just watch it on Hulu Plus when new episodes come out. Same thing for Saturday Night Live. I like to think of myself as a pretty social lady. I'm not home on Saturday night. I don't have any time to watch that, but I like the show, so I watch on Sunday mornings. That's actually more convenient for me. And you can kind of skip around because you're really, truly watching everything on demand. It's great. You can watch every episode of Lost, Doctor Who, Community, Star Trek. That's kind of cool. If you're three seasons behind on a show, binge watch on Hulu Plus. It's easy to use. I actually really like their iPad app. It's almost my favorite way to consume Hulu content. I can take it to the gym. Yeah, if I know I'm going to be like, you're stuck in the DMV for a while, it's like you're watching a show. You're actually pretty happy. You're just sitting there having a good time on Hulu Plus. You can also try Hulu Plus free for 2 weeks when you go to huluplus.com/twit. That's a special offer for you guys because we love you and we want you to have a healthy and happy new year. But we love you anyway. We love you all the entire year. Special offer for listeners and watchers of The Social Hour, huluplus.com/twit, and you get the extended free trial. And so we know, they'll know that we sent you. And we thank Hulu Plus for their support of Twit, and we hope you enjoy watching videos instantly on Hulu Plus. All right, Amber, okay. It's that time. Rad or fad, what's on tap?
Well, I thought we should do something that was kind of festive, and what would be better than a Little Bubs Yule Log video, which on Mashable, they say it's a Christmas meowicle, and it is 1 hour long, Sarah. This is the thing. I mean, I just kind of scrolled through to see if it was actually a full hour of this cat sitting in front of the fire. And it really is. You know, Little Bub seems to purr a little bit, move around somewhat. But I don't know. I mean, Sarah, what would one do with this?
What would one do with this? What would one not do with this? This is a video that you have on, you know, your TV at home as you're sitting around the fire on Christmas Eve, singing your Yuletide songs. And you've got Little Bub and her fire looping. It's the Bub Yule Log. It's funny, too, because, yeah, there's a couple little cuts in the hour. But in general, I think that she's just happy and, you know, getting a little warm, fired rump and, you know, making her little squeaks and purrs and doing her bub thing. And, Amber, I could not be more thrilled with this. It's the best thing that I saw all week. And I saw some cool stuff, but this is actually the best.
It's up there. Okay, I'm going to let you reserve judgment then. I'm guessing you're going to say that this is rad. It's not a fad. Like, we're not sick of Little Bub yet.
Nope. This is rad. Okay. This is as rad gets. It does not get better. This is my Christmas present. I love it.
Okay, well, you know what? I won't say it's a fad then. I'll agree with you and say that it's rad. Although I think, you know, next year, I think there's room for, you know, another animal to become a meme aside from cats.
Yeah.
Like dogs.
Right,
corgis.
Yeah. We you know, maybe, okay. So a little bit of a prediction. We're getting to the end of the year. I guess we'll just predict that 2014 will be year of the celebrity dogs. We've got a couple of them. We've got Boo on Facebook. He's a legitimate celebrity dog.
Oh, that's true.
I guess you could say the, you know, the Obama's dog. They have two now. They're sort of celebrity dogs. But yeah. No, there's room for maybe
it's not even a dog, but
no, well now yeah, you're I just think... now you're just opening the floodgates. I mean, what's it going to be? A ferret? A orangutan?
Well, what is that? There was a big social media campaign years ago when Twitter first started, and I think it was of a merkit. Is that right?
Meerkat.
Do you remember that?
Meerkat.
Yeah, meerkat. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What is that?
A meerkat? You've never seen the show Meerkat Manor, obviously.
Oh, my God, Sarah. It's like you're living in another universe right now.
Apparently so. Yeah. What's happening in Toronto? Where are they keeping these things from you?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Meerkat Manor is a series.
Okay.
And it's about a family of meerkats, and they look sort of like little kitty squirrels. They stand up like this. They're adorable. I mean, they were made for the internet.
But it's very cat-like still, though, right?
They are cat-like. They're marsupial-like, though, too, in a way.
Okay.
Yeah, they're quite adorable. Yeah.
You know, who were we? I know we're going to wrap up the show, but I just remembered having a conversation with someone. Oh, it was Alexis who was asking what our spirit animals were.
Oh, that's
that
right.
That was funny.
What did you say yours was? A cool bird or something?
I think it was a lizard.
It was a cool lizard.
Just not that cool. I couldn't think of anything. But I feel like, you know, I feel like adapting in an environment is so important to me that I couldn't think of anything but a lizard. I don't know.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's, you know, you could have like chameleon properties and lizards are cool. You know, when, I don't know if you, well, you grew up in sort of the country as well. I used to catch a lot of lizards when I was little and, you know, their tails fall off and it's like a defense mechanism because they can get away and then they regrow a tail. I mean, that's crazy. So in that way, that's a pretty cool spirit animal to have.
Yeah. Like if I don't think my limbs will grow back.
Too much about childhood, more about social. All right, well, that is it for this episode of The Social Hour. Those of you who followed along with us live, thank you so much for sitting through some of our little tech issues that we had at the beginning of the show. Our guest, Nick Bilton, has been tweeting at me on Twitter, because that's where you tweet things, and says he is absolutely game to do part two of our interview with him. So we will absolutely set that up and continue it. And hopefully by that time, he'll have a little bit more drama and gossip from the Hollywood version of the next phase of hashing Twitter, which I'm very excited about. I mean, Nick is going to be thinking about Twitter for many years to come, it sounds like to me.
So it's a lot of Twitter, but excited he's coming back on the show because I think we'll get him on a good internet connection and talk to him a little bit more in the new year. And also, if you guys have any guests you want us to have on the show, let us know, because we've done pretty well with some amazing guests this year, but of course, always open to having more. So let us know what you guys think. You can tweet us and just include @ Sarah Lane and @ Amber Max to make sure we both see it.
Yes, absolutely. All right, that's the end of our... Is it our second to... Yes, it's our second to last social hour of the year. I mean, it's so close to 2014, Amber, that I just feel like everything's sort of melting down. I don't know what day it is, but we're here.
It's true.
We've had a great hour, a lot of good stuff for you, and we'll be back next week with another good social hour that is tackling kind of the best of 2013. We're going to do a roundup show.
It's going to be a good one. So we'll see you all here next week. Until then, I'm Amber MacArthur.
And I'm Sarah Lane. See you guys soon.